Welcome to Soul Sciences. I'm your host, Charlene. Many of these podcasts explore writers, especially memoir writers, as they examine the journey of their lives. From time to time, you will discover a totally unique podcast on subjects ranging from muons to those lights that flash when you press your eyelids and anything in between. I hope you enjoy today's program on Soul Sciences. Hello, listeners. I have with me today Deb Brandon, who has written a book called But My Brain Had Other Ideas. And if you know anyone, or if you yourself are, anything connected with brain injury, you will definitely want to get this book. But even if you don't, you are going to have a wonderful experience going through the actual experience, as Deb describes it, of how life is lived in the continual healing process of living with brain surgery and what has been a brain injury. Deb Brandon, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Now, Deb, you're a mathematics professor at Carnegie Mellon. Am I right about that?
Yep.
And you were a mathematics professor with a husband, two kids, full-blown life, and then you're 46 years old, and please tell us what happens.
Just out of the blue, I was proctoring an exam with my students, and I went to answer a question, and my balance went out. Well, that was odd, but then it came back, and a few hours later, I got really dizzy. My left arm went numb, tingly, and that was it. I mean, I had maybe a couple more. It was on and off for a couple of days, and that was the end of it. And my next annual exam with my personal physician.
GP, yeah, we call him up here in Canada, yeah.
And she sent me for testing, including a brain MRI, and that's when I was diagnosed. Nothing happened until the following year, and that's when all hell broke loose. I had some acute bleeds, my balance went out the window, I had some seizures, tremors, a whole bunch of things, including confusion, all sorts of things.
Did you know at that time what it was? Had you been told that you had this condition?
Yes, actually, that's the previous year when I went for the brain MRI, that's when I found out. And I went to see a neurosurgeon, and he said to me, probably never going to happen again. Yeah, I proved him wrong.
Yeah, you sure did. And so what happened after that acute, say you were 47 years old now and you're having these acute symptoms, what was the medical response to this situation?
Well, in the Pittsburgh area where I live, big center for neurology is in Presbyterian Hospital. They were saying, wait and see. They wait for the second acute bleed.
Oh.
I was in bad shape. I was confused. And it was very much yes doctor, no doctor type thing for a while anyway. And then at some point, my quality of life was just awful. I couldn't drive. I couldn't work. I wasn't much of a mother. And finally emerged out of denial. I started reading a bit about it. I was afraid to before. And I realized something had to be done. I couldn't continue like this. And I found a book it was called Into Oblivion by Sasha Bronstad, something like that. And she had the exact same experience. She had a cavernous angioma, which is a tangle of malformed blood vessels. She had one in her brainstem, and she went and had surgery in Phoenix. And so that's the first time I heard about this guy. In Pittsburgh, I was being told it's too risky, we'll wait for the second bleed. So I got a second opinion from this guy in Phoenix, and he said just by the location of the one in the brainstem and the size of the other one, that was life-threatening. You do not want to wait for any other bleed, let alone acute. So I had the two surgeries a day apart.
Astonishing. That is, I can't even begin to imagine two brain surgeries. I can't even imagine one, but then two a day apart. And then what happened?
Well, then I went into inpatient rehab. Thank God it was right there and then, because I was there for a week and then I had a grand mal seizure and it turned out I had a leak with the cerebral spinal fluid and it had to be patched up. So that was a third emergency surgery. That third one broke me. For the one, the first two was planned. I had time to shore up my defenses, and my way of dealing with fear and anxiety is often, you know, a good way of dealing with it is laughter. And I, so I was joking with everyone. And also, the atmosphere feels really heavy around you. People are feel awkward, or they're just so distressed, and I couldn't stand being surrounded by that atmosphere. So to alleviate it, I also joked a lot, including in hospital with nurses and doctors. But after the third surgery, that stopped it. That dried up the jokes. And I was really, I was numb and depressed for a long time afterwards.
Well, yes. Now, I was reading through that book, and of course, because of my background in working with people in depression and understanding, I believe, something of post-traumatic situation, it seems to me that major surgeries are a trauma. And it seems to me that the anesthetic that is so necessary for us, I know it stays in the body for at least 6 months. So those two things alone, I would think, would contribute to a fairly major bout of depression coming out of those kinds of surgeries. And the reason I say that is that there's a really difficult moment in depression where people identify with it. I am depressed. This is me. There's something wrong with me, and that's why I get depressed. What do you think of all those things, Deb, that I'm saying in light of what you've experienced?
Actually, at the time, I didn't think of it in terms of the anesthesia. Originally, I knew I was very emotionally volatile, and I was depressed, but I thought of it as situational. And of course, I've been through hell and back. Makes sense. Between the bleeds and the surgeries, there was a day when I found myself going, I wonder what meds would
take you out that door so you don't come back. Yeah, I get it.
Right. And I actually went through because I was having all sorts of the seizures, blood pressure, and all sorts of things. And then I caught myself and went, yikes, stop there. Between the two brain surgeries, or I don't remember which one it was, I was afraid I'd stay the way I was, where I couldn't take care of myself and I didn't want to be a burden and all this kind of stuff. So that was another time where I was thinking, okay, how am I going to do this? You know, can I collect the pain meds without them watching me? But the interesting thing was, at one point I said to myself, oh, if I could only get on the internet and figure out which meds would do it. But again, I kept on telling myself that, oh, you don't have it in you, no big deal, no worries, and all that kind of thing. And also, because of my poor memory, I'd forget things from one day to the next, and I just, you know, okay, the next day I was feeling great, so...
Bit of a blessing, that memory gap in that case.
But then after the surgeries, as I said, I was in really bad shape after the third surgery, and... My friend was telling me I need to go see a psychiatrist. I was seeing a therapist, but she said, you need meds. And I went, oh, no, I don't have it in me. And then it was about 2 weeks where I was going, okay, I know how I'm going to do this. I should tell my therapist and this friend, but I don't want to because I don't want them to stop me. And when I got out of that, you know, crawled out of that abyss, that's when I went, oops, and decided I don't want to get back into that dark place. And then that's when I went on meds.
Oh, yes. Yes, those meds are great, and they have a great use. We all like to think that we don't need this or that or the other thing, but your brain has been operated on, and that's going to bring up a lot of nightmarish qualities for anyone. It's not personal. It's just the way I believe that we would respond to that. I personally can see very much why those meds would be helpful, and I'm very glad that you got them.
I was averse to taking medication.
Sure.
And I thought, well, okay, it's temporary. Once I heal, my depression will be fine. And I learned that that's not the case, that I have severe depression and it's here to stay.
Huh.
I've tried cutting back on my meds and it's not pretty. So,
you know, the realism of your approach is really commendable. You say that you gave way after your third brain surgery. Well, I remember having pneumonia not too long ago, and it was a very mild case, but I was making all the nurses miserable, and I was crying, and I was just a mess, because I'm not that kind of courageous. I'm like, give me the meds and get me out of here. So as soon as they gave me something, I think it was morphine, just to maybe probably quiet me out, then, you know, then I was perfectly fine. But I really think that your courage is amazing. And again, I think the idea to me is to separate out a sense of self, that somehow yourself is in some way lacking or not strong enough, instead of going, look, if you had a damaged enough arm that you needed a prosthetic, that's the same reason that you take the meds. That's how I would see it. What do you think of that?
I think that's true. I think, I mean, this is one of the big problems with invisible disabilities, that people, you know, people say, oh, it's all in your head. Well, in my case, it is. But it's a tough one. And people don't see it like that. And sometimes they think you're being melodramatic and whatnot. And seeing it in terms of, it is. I mean, I know that my brain is a part of me, but I refer to it as the bloody brain, because in some sense there's a separation there. So I can be a bit more.
That's right.
Objective. Well, I'm not sure if that's the right phrase. So finally, my attitude became that, yeah, it has to be taken care of. End of story.
That's
it. But it took me a while.
Well, it would. You know, you're a fairly independent person. You do dragon boat racing, which is a very physically demanding situation. And as a mathematics professor, I imagine you're used to solving problems on your own. And so to have this big life challenge would be amazing. But Deb, if I may, I'd like to read for our listeners a small passage from Post-Surgeries, Fall and Winter 2007, you write in the chapter Rebuilding, chapter 14. It is as if the surgeries have lifted a spell that held me prisoner. Over the years of my life, I became numb to the world. The bloody brain stripped that away. Now I feel connected in a way I've never experienced before. I am one with the marvels surrounding me. That struck me so deeply. Can you give our listeners more commentary on that, please?
Okay, so I'll give one example. I used to enjoy teaching very much. But now I love it. I'm really passionate about it. And I'm much better than I was. And it's as though, and I've said this before, I think of it as having lived in pastels before, and now it's in brilliant colors.
Amazing.
It's, so I've had some filters that have been damaged, and this is part of my issue with having trouble processing sensory input, that everything has the same weight. So if you whisper to me versus the phone rings, it's the same, it's got the same weight in my brain. It just, so all this data comes in and you can't, you don't, your brain just can't handle it and can't categorize things. And what happens, so in other words, you have issues with details become the same thing as big things happening. The plus side of it is that you notice the details more. So you notice things happening around you. I mean, I'm much more in tune with other people than I used to be. I mean, think about it. Mathematicians in tune with people. This is not the norm. All you have to do is hang out in the math department and you'll see that. So I'm much better at reading cues, social cues. I enjoy my surroundings much more. Yes, I had things that I loved to do. I had passions before. I loved reading. I loved going out for walks. But it's taken on something else. I mean, I was driving home. Well, I was being driven home today, and I went, oh, what a nice tree.
Yes.
I can't see that having happened before.
Yes.
I mean, clearly getting into writing has done that, has helped with that too.
Yes.
But the other thing is it's given me writing. The bloody brain gave me writing. And that has enriched my life beyond anything I can think of. And I don't know how I would, I can't imagine living without writing. And that's, you know, I talk about gains and losses. That's one of the gains. And in my mind, that gain, together with the passion, the seeing, being more in tune with the world around me, those gains outweigh the losses. I have no regrets. I wouldn't want to go through it again, but I don't go, oh, woe is me. It brought me here. I like myself so much better. I'm much more comfortable in my own skin. Comparing who I was to who I am, clearly there's a connection, and there's a big connection. But I wouldn't change who I am for the world. And one thing is, I feel like I was stagnating for a long time before the brain injury, and now I'm moving on. Life is good.
Boy, Deb, you are just an inspiration for so many people who are struggling. If you can say that, then we all take heart from that. Thank you so much for agreeing to come on the program. Will you come back again and speak with us sometime?
Oh, I'd love to. This is fun.
Indeed it is. I've enjoyed myself. Thank you so much, Deb. That's it. That's all for today's program. Many thanks to Kevin MacLeod for this lovely music called Carefree. For more of my works, including excerpts from my books, go to www.soulsciences.net. And remember, take good care of each other. Bye for now.